To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, I'll be your host. And if you want to talk cars, you have a car question, I'm really good at those, I think. And I'm really even better that when the wife and the husband are arguing about something, and I'm always willing to chime in. But beware, guys, I usually side with the wife. It's the path of least resistance, if you know what I mean. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nate's a good guy. You just have to meet him to know he's the kind of guy you'd want as your neighbor. He has really good people. He gets the job done. And he does all kinds of service, repair, and parts for foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. He's south of I-17 on the Pinnacle Peak Road. He's been around a long time. He sells parts 24 hours a day on their website, strictlydiesel.com. And you can get more information about Nate from my Best Car Repair Shops icon at mark@marksalem.com. You just go to marksalem.com, click Best Shops, then you click Diesel, and you could find out lots of information about Strictly Diesel and Repair. All right, we talked, you may remember, you may not, but I was going to Wisconsin to ride a snowmobile, which is something I've never done. I went with Greg from Phoenix Body Works, and I went from Tom from Action Auto, and Tom has a place there. So we leave on the day that it's supposed to be, depends on where you looked, 30 to 50 degrees below zero. We fly into Minneapolis. I don't think I've ever been colder. I really looked like an idiot because I had a short sleeve shirt and a down vest on. I thought that would be fine, and it's not. So anyway, we get in the car, and we're going to drive now 3.5 hours to Hayward, Wisconsin, and the roads are icy. You can't see any of the lines. There's ice, white ice, across the roads. And everybody's doing 80. And I'm in the back seat, and I'm praying that if something happens, all the airbags will blow up and protect me, because it's just craziness. So we get to Hayward, and we find that the cabin is 23 degrees because I guess the heater hadn't been turned on or something like that. And it was a day and a half before we had hot water because we had to thaw out all the lines. So you can imagine the fun there. The idea in Wisconsin in riding snowmobiles escapes me. I'm not quite sure I understand that. You're going through the forest on these trails that are well-maintained most of the time, 90% of the time. You're zipping in and out. You're climbing hills. You're going through big drifts of snow. And then you get on this lake that's frozen. And for whatever reason, most everybody on the lake's doing north of 70 miles an hour. I'm thinking there's got to be a bump out there in that lake somewhere, and I don't want to hit it. So I'm not going that fast. But even more important, the fun is they have these runs. And so you leave your house in your snowmobile, and you go from bar to bar to bar to bar. And you get this little piece of paper stamped that you went to these bars. And I want you to picture a figure eight. From top to bottom is like 50, 60 miles. Side to side is 20 miles. So we did the top loop first, thinking that we could pick up the restaurants and the bars there. And I want to tell you, I'm a one beer guy, so one beer a day. So I drink a beer, but then I go to iced tea. And sometimes they teased me and said that I went to milk, and that's not true. Or I went to soda pop. So we go to each one of those places, and we get our things stamped. That's day one. Day two, we do the same thing. Now, I'm dressed like the Cookie Monster. I have more layers of clothes than you can imagine. I've got a helmet on with goggles, and I've got these gloves that might as well be good to 100 below zero. And I'm really warm. There's no problem. The wind doesn't bother me or anything. I'm really warm. The problem is when you get to where you're going, it takes 20 minutes to undress. Then you go in, and then when you come back out, it takes 20 minutes to put on your pants, put on your jacket, button everything down, put this sock over your head, get your goggles and your helmet. You got to put your helmet on first because you can't buckle your helmet with your gloves on, and the gloves go on last. So it's this big production. So we go around, and you know what we got for getting, I don't know, there was 10, 12 stamps. We got a T-shirt. A T-shirt. 2 days. Now, I did roll the they call them sleds. I did roll the sled off to the side. I tried to go over this berm in the track of the guy in front of me, but I neglected to think that the left side would fall into the hole that he just made. So I went over. I was fine. And then you go through the forest, and these guys are going fast, and so I'm kind of tailing behind. So I'm keeping up with them enough to just keep them, and I blow down this intersection, and I see them to my left. And by the time I hammered the brakes and made a U-turn, they had me by another half a mile. So I did a couple of things I shouldn't have. It's the first time I've ever been on a snowmobile, but I haven't ridden on anything that has that much power and goes that fast. And you're sitting on a seat with no seat belt. And the only good thing is that the grips on the snowmobile are heated. And they have a little bitty windshield, which really does nothing but add some cosmetic to it. So I'm done with snowmobiles. I was sore a couple of days later, because obviously I'd never ridden one, but I'm good on quads and motorcycles and that kind of stuff. But it was an experience. It wasn't a lot of fun being in the really cold weather, but it wasn't as bad as I thought once I kind of followed the other guys. So I would kind of think, what do they got? Long johns, a pair of Levi's. Nope, they got these plastic pants, and then they put these other plastic pants on top. So once you kind of learn what you're supposed to do, then it's not too bad. So here's my warning. If you go to Wisconsin or Minnesota to ride snowmobiles and you've never done that before and you're going to go with a bunch of people that have, come up with a story why you can't drink liquor at every single place you stop at. Tell them you're allergic to alcohol or tell them something, but you have to come up with some kind of a plan so that you... And they had food at each one of these places and everybody knew one another. And I can tell you, the guys that were riding snowmobiles, I was the smallest. There was guys 6 foot, 6 foot six. They were super trim. They were younger, a lot younger than I was. They had their families and their kids, and I saw kids 10 years old riding snowmobiles. And then when you see somebody on the trail, you both slow down, very slow, and pass one another with respect. So the respect was kind of nice. All righty, we already got a caller, and who might that be, Gil?
That would be Walter.
Walter, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mark. I enjoy your program.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have a question on transmission and transmission fluid changes. I have a 2005 Cadillac SRX. Excuse me.
Okay.
When it's shifting, it's 120,000 miles on it.
Okay.
As it normally shifts very smoothly, no problem, but recently... As it's shifting and as I start to, if I ease off on the gas, as it shifts into fourth gear, I get a rough shift. If I'm accelerating through that fourth gear, it doesn't do it. I'm wondering, am I looking at transmission problems or is it a fluid problem or what are your thoughts on that?
You know, the other day I thought I knew it all and the customer called me back and said it was just low on fluid. And so I had neglected to bring that up to that person, that that's always the first thing we want to do. And on the dipstick, it's going to say how to check the fluid. It's going to say hot in park or cold in neutral. It's going to be a variety of things, but we have to check, look at the dipstick, read the dipstick, and check it. And then there's going to be a low and an add mark. And the car's almost always going to be running. So it'll say, you know, car running hot in park. And so it'll describe that.
You know, I don't think this car has a dipstick on the transmission fluid.
You know, I don't know that 05 doesn't, but there is still a way to check the fluid on what they call sealed transmissions.
Yeah.
Now, at 120, you might just go ahead and have that service done. Have you had it done at all?
You know, I don't think I ever had. I'm the original owner. I've looked at the manual, and the manual says a couple of things. Number one, it says you never have to change the fluid unless it's leaking. Don't worry about it. Unless
Unless
you're driving in city traffic at temperatures over 90 degrees, which we certainly have around here, don't we? Or if you're driving in mountainous territory, and I do drive to Flagstaff periodically, or if you're towing something, or if you're using it as a taxi. Well,
right.
I'm not doing either of those. So I've looked back at my records. And they say if you do that, you should change it every 50,000 miles. I don't think nobody has ever recommended me to change the transmission fluid, so it could be a low transmission fluid or fluid that's turned to jello or whatever it may turn to.
Okay. No, you're exactly right. It's not going to be jello, because if the fluid was thick and molasses-like, you'd have a separate set of problems.
Yeah.
What I hear you describe, you actually have first gear, second gear, third gear, and then overdrive, and then lockup. Now, you may not know that lockup's there, but above 45 miles an hour, you'll feel kind of a bump, and you'll hear the engine drop down. Nothing will happen on the shift selector.
2 minutes.
But that's a lockup converter, so we've locked the engine to the rear wheels or the engine to the front wheel drive in case, I don't know if you're all.
It's a rear wheel drive.
Okay, is it an all wheel drive?
No. Okay. No, it's two wheel.
Okay, so it's going to lock the engine to the rear end, and then what you do is you maintain throttle with your right foot, and you just gently tap the brake pedal with your left foot. And then you might feel like, and then you let go of your brake, and so we're going to see an RPM change with slight brake application above 45 miles an hour, maybe above 50. And so we're going to see if the lockup is causing the problem. But I think in your car, overdrive's first. And so we go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then we go into overdrive, which is like fourth gear. And then we go into lockup, which is kind of like fifth gear. It's easier to remember it. So if you have a shop, then I would simply, at your next oil change, ask them to decide what to do. Another thing you can do is you can shift it manually.
Yeah.
So you can pull it down into OD and see if the problem exists or it's gone. That will help the transmission shop. If you walk into them and say, the fluid's good, I had it checked, and if I go into overdrive and I don't let it go into lockup, everything's gone. Everything's fine. That will help immensely.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's still there. So if I pull it down to third gear, then it goes away. It's never returned. So it seems like when I go from third to overdrive, then that's where the problem lies.
Yeah, it's just kind of a little clunker. You can feel it. It's a rough shift into the fourth gear.
Okay,
it only does it if I'm taking my easing off on the accelerator as it shifts into that last gear. If I'm accelerating a little bit through that gear, it shifts smoothly.
Okay. Well, that could be wear and tear, but if the computer's going to be kind of confused, you're throttling up, and just about the time it's going, okay, I see all the parameters to shift, you back off the throttle. So we lost the load, we lost some RPM, and
yeah.
I'm wondering if the computer's going into overdrive and coming right back out. And then you said, if I stay on the throttle gently, then that bump or RPM rise or the clunk doesn't appear. So
that's right.
So maybe let's pull it into overdrive and let's see what happens. Because if it goes away, then just drive it in overdrive. And I want to tell you something, you're going to have a transmission in the next 50,000 miles. There's just no, I'd bet 30 cents that you're going to have a transmission before 170,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So you can decide what you want to do at that point.
What are transmissions cost in a car like that?
You're probably $5,000 to $7,000, and I'm going to I'm shooting from the hip.
That's time to get rid of the car. The car's not worth that much, is it?
But wait a minute. If you decide I'm going to get rid of it, and I'm going to go buy a new car, okay? Fair enough?
Well, at my age, I'm getting pretty old, and I'm trying to make this car last for the duration.
Okay. All right. Well, let's look at it from two points of view. If you buy a new car, the sales tax and license will pay for the transmission twice.
Yeah, that's
And those
true.
Are non-recoverable dollars. Number two, you got 120,000 miles in 14 years, right?
Right.
Okay, so I'm going to go 120 divided by 14, and I should turn on my calculator, and then it works better. 120 divided by 14, you're doing 8,000 miles a year.
Yeah, and I'm probably driving less than that now since I'm well retired. And so
okay, my point is that at 8,000 miles a year, let's just call it 8,000 miles a year, and we do 120,000, and then we're going to divide that by, let's go 8,500. That means that you got 14 years to pay back the transmission. Okay?
Yep.
And if you factor $5,000, we'll take the middle. We'll take $6,000, and we're going to divide that. What did I say the monthly fee was? I lost it on my calculator. $85. 6,000 divided by 8,500 miles. You've got, where's my equal sign? You've got seven. I lost my place because I'm late for a break. So here's the math. The math is real simple. You're just going to take what if you spend $6,000 for the transmission and you're driving 8,500 miles a year, then that gives you a yearly cost. And I think you have multiple years to pay that back, which isn't bad.
But you got
an air conditioning system as well, and that's going to be probably another $2,000. So you got those two things that you're staring you in the face between now and 200,000. I got to run. We'll be back. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And Walter, this is kind of what I was figuring out. If you charged yourself $100 a month once you put that $6,000 transmission in there, so you're going to do $100 a month times 12 months, that's $1,200 a year, and then we know that $6,000 divided by 1,200 is going to be 5 years. So if you just charge yourself $100 a month to drive the car, then you're going to pay it off in 5 years, and that's how it works. I look at it from, and you can't rent a car for $100 a month. You can hardly rent a car for $100 in 2 or 3 days. So $100 a month is pretty doggone cheap. I'm not trying to talk you in or out. You just, from a mathematical point of view, I usually take the, I'll put it in and just add that to my monthly cost. I'm sure you don't have a payment on the car. So $100 a month kind of for the pay the transmission is a piece of cake. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repair is owned by that scoundrel Tom, and he's the one that took me to Wisconsin. He's the one that tried to get me inebriated. He's the one that fed me really good food, and he's the one that made fun of me when I was crying because it was 60 or 30 below zero. But he's a good guy. I just spent 4 days with him and Greg I'm just all screwed up because I'm looking at one thing and I'm not looking at the other. Nevertheless, Phoenix Body Works. Greg's was Phoenix Body Works. So Tom at Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley. He's been around since 1983. I've known him since 1983. He's well known for his quality workmanship. He has technicians that are ASE Master Certified, which is the highest level for automotive certification you can get. So Action Auto Repairs, I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. If you don't have a shop in that area, I would suggest that you just get an oil change and see how you like them. You may not like them, but I'm betting you will. Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. We talk about transmission fluid, and as Walter said just a few minutes ago, oh, by the way, 602-508-0960. That's the phone number you can call in, 602-508-0960. Walter talked about that the transmission service was like 120 unless you blah, 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 blah. Well, you'll notice he said stop and go driving. He said mountainous terrain, and he talked and high temperatures. Well, that's just Phoenix. So most cars have two transmission services, and the severe covers Phoenix. So severe is a little earlier than not severe. The whole purpose of changing the transmission fluid is to give the transmission new fluid. The fluid wears out. It no longer has its lubricity. It's perhaps the fluid has gathered up as much trash in the detergent as it can. Perhaps the detergent or the fluid is no longer capable of 250 degrees and it's really only 200 degrees fluid temperature. So there's lots of that kind of stuff. Now the sealed transmissions are an animal all of their own, but most transmission services, you're going to pull the pan and do the filter. And when you pull the pan and do the filter, then it's going to take you a couple of extra dollars for fluid, but you're not going to get all the fluid. That's the issue. So if you do a manual transmission service, you're going to be in the 125 range, whatever. Now, if you're in the transmission full fluid flush range, you're going to be in the 200 plus or minus. So you have those two kinds of things. You can do a full fluid flush out the door and be in the 200, give or take. But there's a lot of other things. If you pull the pan and just do the filter, then you might do 3 of the 10 quarts. And most of the time, That's not a great idea. Flushing the transmission is a good idea because you're replacing all the fluid and not just 4 quarts of the 10, 3 quarts of the 10. So that's kind of how it works. But anyway, if you're up near Action Auto, he's a good guy. I would strongly suggest that you entertain an idea, and you don't have a garage, then stop by. All righty, let's go to the phones, and who have we got, Gil?
Hey, hello to Luke.
Luke, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning. So I've got a 2016 Subaru Outback, and it's my wife's car, so she's been on me to get it fixed. But the passenger window goes on the fritz when you try to put it up. Sometimes it doesn't even work. Sometimes it, like, goes up, and then it's like the safety system's hitting, and it'll back off it. So it's just annoying. So I'm wondering if you think that's something I can take on myself. I'm fairly mechanically inclined, or do I need to run that into a shop?
You know, I'm going to change your question a little bit. Mark, window motors and window regulators, do you do a few of those? And yeah, we probably do one or two a week. Number two, do people, you know, usually have you do it, or they do it themselves? And my answer is most of the time they try to drive do it themselves, and then they bring it to us in pieces.
Okay.
But wait a minute. Let me do some diagnostics for you, okay, because that's important. I'm going to tell you a quick story. The other day, I have lunch with a bunch of coppers, and one of them is complaining because his Ford truck, the passenger side window was intermittent. And, of course, I tease people with Ford trucks good-naturedly. So I walked down, and I said, "Daryl, come on, let's go out
in the parking
lot."
I'm right there with you.
Okay, okay. So I go out to the side, and I go, "Daryl, this is what I want you to do. Get in the truck and start up your car, and when I tell you, I want you to hold your button into the down position." And he says, "Well, it might work. Why not?" I said, "Try it." And it didn't go. So I take my fist, and on the outside of the door, I hit it pretty hard, not enough to dent it, but I hit it pretty hard. The window goes down. And he goes, "Okay." And I said, "See, all you have to do is have your wife stand outside and pound on the outside of the door when the window doesn't work." What that tells me is that the brushes in the motor are bad. So that sounds like a motor problem, especially if the scissor action of the window going up and going down is smooth when it does work. So more times, so when it doesn't work at all, she sits, she starts the cars up, she sits, and she got the window button down or up, whichever way it's stuck, and you just hit it like this, okay? And if it goes, then that you tell your shop that, and you say, "This is what I make to do it." Now, it could be a bad connection, but more than likely, it's just a window motor has got the brushes. How many miles are on this?
Like 40 or 50.
Okay.
Not a lot.
Yeah, it's not likely to be a regulator, because if the regulator's broken, the window won't move no matter what, and you'll hear the motor running. So you hear the motor running, but you don't see the window going up and down. So I'm just giving you an idea of what you can try. I got to go. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you have a car question, you want to discuss some kind of issue, 602-508-0960. We have four lines open right now. 602-508 and then 0960 represents KKNT's 960. So again, 508-0960. That's the phone call. I want to talk to you real quick about Auto Dynamics. In Sun City, there's lots of auto repair shops. There's also some that are brand new. And I would suggest you do your best to stay away from the ones that haven't been open very long. Typically, they don't last very long, and I think you should go to somebody who's been around a while. Auto Dynamics has been in Sun City since 1983. Chuck Nyday opened it. Derek, his son, now runs it. Derek's better than Chuck, and actually he's better than I am because Chuck and I came up from a different generation. Derek's smart, he's honest, he's dependable, he knows what good service is, and he's made the decision that staff and mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, he can ensure you that you're not going to have unnecessary parts and labor. We're all kind of watching that to see how that works out. So he's got his technicians either on an hourly wage or on a salary. Nevertheless, if you're in Sun City, Auto Dynamics is on the north side of Grand at 99th Avenue, just west on the west side. He's a good place to start. I promise you, you'll be happy. Derek runs the joint. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark.
Morning.
Y'all have a 2006 Duramax, and every time I try to use the windshield wipers, washers, I should say, it causes a big leak on the bottom. Is that can I use a regular hose for that, or is it a form-fitted hose?
No, you can use windshield wiper hose, and they make it a variety of things. If I were you and you know it's a hose, I'd just cut it in half and cut off a half an inch or an inch on it, walk into the auto parts store, say, give me a foot of this.
Okay.
So,
okay,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a form-fitted, you know, all kinds of curves and stuff in it.
Yeah, is it hard plastic or is it soft rubber plastic?
I think it's a hard plastic.
Okay. If that's the case, the question is could you still use rubber?
Correct.
Okay. You know, you just have to have a little bit of slack. And what I would do if the sprayer's up on the wiper, then I'd run a small piece of hose up to the sprayer, and I'd just take a tie and tie it to the arm, and then let it pivot from the very bottom underneath the backside of the hood. But if it's free-formed, then yes, you can go to the dealership, or you can get on the internet and find a free-formed one, and you'd be fine.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much for the information.
You betcha. Thank you very much for calling. Bye-bye. And we're going to put wiper, washer, hose, so that if anybody wants to argue with me, I remember which call it was. And anyway, 602-508-0960, and we do have another caller. Who's that?
That would be Ed.
Ed, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning to you.
Thank you.
I have an Acura MDX, and I had a battery go dead on me. I was kind of surprised at that. I didn't want to test it. I had a warranty, so I just got a replacement. And within a day or two, that went dead. And I had the auto parts store test my alternator. Batteries said they were good after charging it. I did some YouTubing.
Nope. We stopped up. Stop. Nope, I'm not interested in YouTubing. That's a bunch of people that have no credentials, and there's certainly no... And you just forgive me, but... You have no idea if the person you're talking to on YouTube knows anything about cars. But let's talk about your problem. First of all, having the auto parts store check your electrical system is like having my 10-year-old grandson check your electrical system. They don't have the equipment. They don't have the knowledge. They don't know what the numbers mean or anything. Let's go back to the beginning. When your battery was bad, did it crank slow or did it not crank at all?
Not at all. Nothing.
Okay. Did it click? Was there a click and nothing? Okay. I'll bet you have a bad battery connection. I'll bet you have a bad battery connection. And that would have been really easy to find. But see, you decided to just have the battery changed out, and they didn't say, no, we want to check the system first. We may waste your time and ours. So here's what
we
do.
Well, they wasted 5 days of my time.
Okay, whatever. So the idea is when you check a battery and you know what you're doing, here's what goes on. Okay, I walk up to your battery, and I have a voltmeter in my hand on DC voltage. And I put it on the terminal, and I hit a ground, and it says 12.8. So then I go to the ground, to the positive side, and it better say 12.8. So I'm checking the ground strap and the power strap. And so I'm going to check those to make sure there's no loss of voltage. So the battery has 12.8. Then I check the positive side, the hot side, and I check the negative side. Better have 12.8. So from there, I start the car up, and I better go from 12.8 north about a volt. So we should go to 13.8. Then I'm going to look at the diode pattern of the alternator. And if the diode pattern is bad, instead of a bunch of M's, it's got big spikes in it, then the diodes are bad, and that's causing the draw that may draw the battery down overnight. But I need a bunch of M's. So at that point, then I shut it off, and I take an amp meter, and I wrap it around the positive or the negative cable, and I disable the fuel system or the spark, and I have you crank it over. I better not see the battery voltage drop below 9.6. Matter of fact, I'd be real unhappy if it dropped below 10.5. So I'm going to look at the starter draw to make sure the starter isn't drawing excessive amps. But the click, the no click, tells me a lot. The no click almost always means a bad connection at the battery. Now, if you were to have the no click situation, then you go take a rag on the battery cables and you wiggle one of them back and forth, get back inside and see if it starts. If it does, you just found your bad connection. But there's no amount of YouTube that can tell you what's the matter without testing. That's like the guys on YouTube say, blah, 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 blah. But I say, wait a minute. Checking the fuel pressure is an important consideration in this, hey, it won't go faster than 40 miles an hour. You never said anything about that because you can't check their fuel filter from Wisconsin. So the guys on the jabber on the internet just disturbs me, because I have customers come in that say to me, I want to fix it because I watch YouTube, and I look them in the eye and I go, I want to tell you something. You're going to sign a document that says you're going to pay me no matter the success. So you're going to pay me no matter if it works or not, and I want to tell you, you'd be the first one to win in 10 years if that's what happened. But you want me to guess with your money based on some clown in Wisconsin. And that makes no sense whatsoever. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 12 talking about car and car repair. And I also tell you about my favorite shops. The reason I tell you about my favorite shops is for no other reason, is to help you understand that there's some good guys out there. Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa that's passed our filter. It's been around since 1970, and Brian and Thelma actually date back to the 1960s. They're families in the car repair business. So they've both been around a long time. They have ASE certified technicians. They really do a good job with customers. They know when your vehicle is due for service, and they'll typically let you know that, but it's based on mileage versus, you know, years and stuff like that. So it's really easy and convenient to keep your vehicle in tip-top shape if you allow Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing to do your oil changes, because as they go through the oil change, they'll tell you what you need. So that's the time they check the hoses, the belts, the tires, they look at the brakes, they check the battery, the connections. That's all part of an oil change, including the spare. So Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, they're on Main Street, just east of Stapley, Main and Street, east of Stapley. The phone number is 602-508-0960. Ed, I'm sorry for treating you the way I did, but I just get wound up on this YouTube thing, because the YouTube guys pretend they know everything, and they tell you how to fix your car, but they don't have a permit. If I was in Wisconsin, I couldn't tell you how to fix your car. I couldn't. And I'm a master tech and have been for 30 years. I've been in the repair business for 39 years. So I can't fix cars over the phone, because if I did, I'd have fixed yours. But and then you got this three-whiskered kid that's got this little stupid little meter with a red and green light. Well, I don't know where that thing's specced. I don't want your voltage to drop below 9.6 when it's cranking. But you know what? If I was dishonest, I'd build that thing to flunk you at 11. That way, it's going to flunk. Oh, you need a battery. Look here. The light's red when you crank it. Oh, come on. When does that light come on? 9.6 is really the bottom, so it should come on at 9.5. So we got all this other stuff. And when you take a three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store and have him check your car out and tell you what's the matter with it, he's motivated by sales. So he might start at the most expensive thing. But unless you test the problem, especially the code, you don't have an idea what to fix it. So if we've got a lean condition and all the O2 sensors are screaming, I need more fuel, it could be a plugged fuel filter. It could be a bad fuel pressure regulator. It could be a leaking injector. It could be a bad fuel pump. You got four possibilities, and the kid on the internet has not got a prayer in hell of telling you which one it is, because you have to open the hood and check them. So that's kind of what it is. I'm sorry that you had this problem, but, oh, and by the way, the electrical system check, what I do on all of you, what I do is I take my price and I bracket it, because I want you to know that there's guys cheaper than me and the guys more expensive. I already know what mine is. So an electrical systems test of the battery, the alternator, the starter, the grounds, everything, the diodes, that's $40. So you can expect to pay somewhere between $30 and $50 or $60. So that's how it works. That's the electrical systems tech. Hank, good morning. How can I help you?
Yeah, hey, good morning, Mark. Good to talk with you again here.
Thank you.
I've got a 2015 Sierra, the 6.6 Duramax. I noticed the other day, or I started up from a cold start, the engine light came on, and I got the service emissions, something like service emissions and CE owner's manual. I looked at the owner's manual. There's really nothing in there other than you take it to, you know, have it serviced, basically. So
okay, how many miles are on it?
67,000.
Okay. You know, I don't know what to tell you. You really need to identify the code and what the code, or why the service engine soon light is on. You need to identify, start with the code, and hopefully that'll give you, it tells you what city you're supposed to be at. So it tells you first, right, what state and then the city. So I'm not real familiar with, I can tell you this much. There's Dodge trucks out there with diesels. They turn this stupid light on. It scares you to death. There is a procedure just to start the light over again and move on. If you don't have a problem, and we're not belching blue smoke, black smoke, if your fuel economy hasn't fallen on its face, if the thing doesn't start cold, the thing doesn't start hot, boom, we'll look at, we'll follow that code up. But if the truck runs good and the opacity, which is smoke out of the back, is minimal, especially when your wife's driving it, then you've got all these dynamics that go on. Now, I'm going to change my mind about getting on the internet, okay? I think you should do Duramax 66 service engine soon and then put the code. And I think you might find, if there's a consensus, and I'm being facetious here, you might find that you get in the truck, you turn the key on but don't start it, you open the door twice, you roll down to the window once, honk the horn once, and it'll reset the light. I'm being facetious.
Right.
So you might find that somebody says, maybe you find 10 guys that said, I took it to the shop, they charged me $69, and they didn't fix anything. They said it's okay. So there's a risk associated with that. But I don't know your answer. But I'll tell you what, somebody's going to call me in a few minutes and tell me the answer. So, and that's
that'd
okay.
Be good.
And you know, I'm not proud to say that. I just don't know. I mean, I could look it up pretty quick, but what code did you have?
I didn't get a code. This just happened yesterday, and I did see at one point a message came up. It resets overnight. The engine light goes off. I turn it on, and after a few minutes, and I start to take off, the engine light will come on, and then it'll come up with that same message I just told you. But yesterday I saw one that said speed will be limited to 65 miles per hour after 175 miles.
Now we're talking. Now we're talking. Okay, you have a particulate filter in the exhaust system, and I'll bet you put around town and you haven't been to Flagstaff at 75 miles an hour for a while. Am I right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Yep. All right. So what we've got is we've got sensors down by your exhaust, and we want to be able to have the front one hot and the back one cold. We want to have pressure on the on the front of the catalytic particulate filter. We want to have the temperature on the front pretty close or different than the back, because something's coming in hot should go out cold. But we also have pressure. And if we have pressure in the front that's 10 pounds and pressure at the back that's none, then we've got that particulate filter in the middle just plugged up. I'll tell you what. I would just go drive the hell out of that thing and take your wife to Casa Grande or Tucson or Flagstaff and just abuse it. Drive it like you stole it. And if you get on the freeway and you get that particulate filter out, what they're saying is the particulate filter's really plugged up, and I can see that in the sensors. So you need, I'm going to drop the mile an hour to 40 so you can't hurt the catalytic or the opacity or the particulate filter or the rest of the car. That's what it's basically saying to you. In reality, you can take it to a shop and they'll plug in their thing and say, liar, liar, fence on fire, and they can reset it. I suggest that you just get on the freeway. And here's something else. When you're driving around town, drop it down into second gear and bring the RPMs up. And, you know, when the light turns green and nobody's around, you kind of throttle up a little extra hard. Let's get it really hot. What part of town do you live in?
I'm up in the New River area.
Okay. I'd just go to Camp Verde or I'd go to Flagstaff. Do you have a wife or a girlfriend?
Yeah.
All right.
Got a wife. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you don't have a wife and a girlfriend. But
just a wife.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, take her to Little America, spend the night, and on your way up and on your way back, drop the RPM down, and if you're normally at 1,500 RPM, drop a gear down and get it up to about 22 or 23 or 24 or 25, and just drive, and throttle up hard and back off. Throttle up hard and back off when you're doing fast, and that'll clean out that system. Okay?
Okay, super. Yeah, right. That sounds great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. You're welcome. Oh, boy. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I got to admit something else to you. We had a car in the other day that we couldn't fix. We just couldn't fix it. And my guys did something that just wads my underwear up something fierce. Let's try this. Oh, that didn't work. Return it to parts. Let's try this. That didn't work. Return it to parts. We did hundreds of dollars for free. It was a clunk, a noise. And the real answer is very rarely does a clunk that we can't find really mean anything. So give the customer back the car and you say, wait till it gets worse and easier to find. No, we didn't do that. Ron, who I'm going to skin when I see him next, decided that he'd try a motor mount and he'd try an axle. Then the axle, he thought, oh, that's an axle. He put another axle in it. So we don't sell parts we've installed in cars. So that makes it really tough. So that car costs me a lot of money. So there is a time where a shop can say to you, I need you to put more miles on it, and let's get it to be worse, and it'll be easier to find. Because right now, you're going to spend a whole lot of money, and I may not find it. So at $125 an hour, or whatever the shop's labor rate, somewhere between $100 and $125, $135, then you're wasting your time. So it's okay, but then your job is to determine how to make it happen. So I turn right, and I kind of throttle up high, and clunk, there's a clunk. And my husband's driven. He's on the passenger side, and I'm on the driver's side. Then we switch places, and we both agree it's in the right front. That's the kind of stuff. That'll save you lots of diagnostic money. So that's kind of what we need. But I'm going to raise my hand and say for the first time in a heck of a long time, we couldn't fix a car. Anyway, let's go to the phones, and who we got?
We have Carl.
Carl, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I just got a quick question. I've got a 2008 Lexus ES350, and I keep the service up regularly, and every time I go in, it's got a little over 100,000 miles on it, about 105, and every time I go in now, the guys are telling me, well, you should have your belts and hoses changed. And I said, I would ask them, I said, well, how do they look? Are they okay? Are they spraying or breaking? No, they look good, but because of the mileage. What's okay. Your opinion on that?
All right. I've been in this business for a long time, and my personal opinion is 80,000 miles. We own 33 cars, but we have a car rental company as well. So, and then I've got lots of family, my wives, my kids, and they all have husbands and wives and stuff like that. So we have quite a car. At 80,000 miles, I'm really looking to do the hoses and belts. It's not a matter of sight because the hose and the belt both wear in an area that you're not likely to see. The hose is from the inside, and the belt's going to be deep within the Vs. So if you have a serpentine belt. And what this was an 08, and it's a Lexus ES350. And how many miles were on it?
About 105,000.
Okay. Well, it ain't like you're not just taking this to the bar and back or taking this to, work and back. I tell people 80,000 miles or 8 years, you're out of both of my parameters. Now, let me explain it. Let me put it to you in another way. If you were going to California and you said, Mark, let me take your four grandkids, I wouldn't let them go. I think the possibility in the next few. Now, I'll tell you also that I think you should wait till April, and I'll tell you why. First of all, cooling systems are going to fail after April, and you get kind of a discount if you're in April, and you do all the hoses and the belts and the coolant. Then you go through summer with everything new, and there's a sense of satisfaction and a sense of confidence if you do that. So my advice was, just wait till April or May, have them done, and I'd probably call around and get some ballpark prices. Because historically, in my world, there can be a 10 on the bottom side to 30 on the top side when we're bidding apples for apples. So a customer comes in, and we got upper loads, lower hose, we got three bypass hoses, we have two heater hoses. Okay. And then we got one belt. That's easy. So, but if they just come in and they just hand me, I don't know what it is. I don't know what they got. Is this just the belt? Is this just the hoses? Do they have a cooling system flush? Do they have a gallon and a half of coolant? So if you get a, and then oftentimes we purposely in our industry are fuzzy on our estimates, so you can't bid them. So you can say to him, I need a specific, how many hoses, how many belts, what's the labor, are you going to flush the coolant, all that kind of stuff. Okay.
Well, the other, one other thing is, the reason I'm not too concerned about it or haven't been is because it's an around town car. You know, my wife drives it shopping, and we go to church and that kind of thing. Never been on really a long trip.
Okay.
So I haven't been too concerned, but I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
They wear out.
But wait a minute. We talk about heat cycles on a car. So if you haven't been on the road, you have more key cycles per 100 miles, and that's warm up and cool down. That kind of aggravates the whole thing. Now, here's my fear. Is your wife a strong woman?
Is she a strong woman?
Yeah. You better say yes.
In physically or mentally yet.
No. Okay. All right. When we come back, I'm going to tell you why I ask that, but we'll be back in a few minutes. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I want to tell you, I got some business to tend to, but I got to do this first. Kurtz Automotive is up at I-17 in Bell. I got to tell you that a lot of my shops do this, but just recently Kurtz did it again. Got a customer on that side of town, calls me up, not a customer, but a caller, and emails me, and I say, you know what, you need to have a fresh pair of eyes, so take it over to Kurtz. And then each and every time, they call me back or email me back and say, got it taken care of. Thank you very much. Love the shop. So that's the kind of guys they are. Eric, Jeff, and Kurt are all master technicians. They're smart. They know what they're doing. They know how to diagnose. They know how to say, I don't know. But they're able to fix cars that have already been around the world and around the valley. So if you're in the I-17 in Bell area, may I see, and you don't have a car repair, or you want to compare your car repair to another shop, then I would do Kurtz. Okay, we were talking to Walt and Carl. We were talking to Carl, and he's kind of deciding on whether he's going to do the belts and hoses on his 08 Lexus, and he's got 105,000 miles, and I asked him if he had a strong woman. Now, there's different women in my life. You've got dominant women, and then you've got partner women, and then you've got people, women that, you know, wouldn't say bad words if they had a mouthful, just kind and quiet. Okay, so here's the story, and this has happened a couple of times. This happened 35 years ago. Lexi is married to an attorney who has passed away. Lexi is driving a 65 Mustang. The attorney could care less about car repair. He fixes everything when it breaks. That's all he does. So Lexi's driving the 65 Mustang. It breaks down. There's a lot of steam. There's all this stuff. So at the end of the day, she just drives to the nearest dealership and she trades the 65 Mustang in for an Explorer. And this was a really nice Mustang. And, of course, the attorney husband just goes crazy. Well, he tried to unwind the deal. And, of course, the dealership says, no, we're not doing that. She had the authority to trade it in. And we really like your Mustang. I've heard that two or three times over the last 40 years. And that should scare you. and of course, no one knows what they're going to buy. So she may buy something very expensive and take $1,000 for the 65 Mustang and walk out of there. And that's, she just tired of the breakdown. So anyway, I say to Carl, that's why I ask about it.
Okay, one last question, Mark. What price range should I be looking at?
Well,
I had them all tried.
I'm going to ballpark it and shoot from the seat of the pants.
That's good.
I'm thinking you got four or five hoses, maybe more, and some of them are going to be bigger and smaller, and the other ones are going to be smaller. And then I've got one or two fan belts. Then I've got a cooling system flush, and I think you could be in the $500 to $700 range, I think.
Okay.
Now, here's something else I wanted to tell you. If they give you an estimate, they have to figure out five hoses and what the total amount is. They have to figure a gallon and a half of coolant. They have to figure two fan belts, and they have to hook all the labor. For them to tell you that they don't have that data behind the estimate is crazy. Now, admittedly, some people will add to the top, and I'm telling you right now, Salem does. We add 10% to the top of our estimate. That's for sales tax. Mm-hmm. Then we add another 10%, and you know why? I can say proudly, nobody leaves my shop where their estimate is not one penny over. The final bill is not one penny over the estimate. I am going to hit the estimate or below it. Now, I'm not going to call you for a $6 radiator cap because I already got 10% of the bill sitting out here. So I'm going to still be underneath my estimate. So that's how you work it. Okay?
Thank you, Mark. All right. I appreciate it.
Good luck to you, Carl. Vince, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah. On the maintenance situation, I have a Lexus 350 RX in 2010. And it's getting about 98,000 miles. And I appreciate the previous conversation because I wasn't looking into doing any hoses or belts either because they looked all good to me. But another question my mechanic asked me on the way out the door of my oil change, he says, you're getting close to a transmission fluid change. And it's my knowledge that this RX 350 2010 is a closed system, and it doesn't need transmission changes. But I go on Lexus forums, and, of course, they're a little bit obsessive-compulsive or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're talking about changing and how to change it and everything else at 50,000 and 100,000. But I'd like to ask your opinion on that.
It's easy. The sealed transmissions always have a service process for them. So you've been around the world four times. You drove the Equator four times. That's a lot of miles. We can't lose sight of that. Now, I'm telling you, you had a synthetic fluid and at the very beginning. So you've gone 100,000 miles with synthetic fluid. But the risk is huge because that transmission could be $8,000 or $9,000. So I'm saying to you, if you had to spend $500 for a transmission service, I'm not quite sure the risk, the reward is bigger and the risk is smaller. Another thing, too, is what does your owner's manual say about a transmission service?
It doesn't mention any of it. I was looking through it.
All right.
And I didn't see anything to that effect. And it was my understanding it was a lifetime deal. But, you know, like you're saying, there's that risk.
And so I'm going to change your question slightly and say, hey, Mark, when you replace a transmission, is there something you see that's common throughout your transmission replacement? And I say, yes, the fluid. And it's burnt, it's dirty, it's black, it's brown. It's not cherry red. It doesn't look like tomato soup diluted a lot. So there is a commonality to the transmissions we replace. And I would say 75% or higher of the time, the fluid is really bad. Now, admittedly, the belts, bands, and clutches could have been going out for 6 months, which smoked the fluid, and now I see it and it smells bad and everything else. I'll go with that. But I still think it's in your, if your intention is to keep this car for another 50 or 100,000 miles, I would have it serviced at 100. But if in the next 125 to 150 you're thinking you're going to get rid of it, I'd still do it because you don't want to have the transmission fail before you want to get rid of it because now you have a big bill. So it's kind of like just decide for yourself how long you're going to keep it. Now, on the other hand, if you're going to trade it in at 110, then I say don't do it.
Right.
Okay?
Okay. How much does that usually cost? They're talking about pumping it. They have to pump it out because it's really not set out for drainage.
You're right.
It's a Toyota transmission. Yeah. Sure.
We know how to do that. We all have those kinds of machine. They're called suck and fill. And it's just not a dipstick and a cooler line kind of thing. So we used to interrupt. Well, we still do. We take the cooler lines off. One of them's pushing and one of them's sucking. So I push the push one into a 5 gallon bucket. And the suck one I've got sitting, the hose is in a brand new 5 gallon bucket of transmission fluid. So old's going out, new's going in. And as soon as I see the old clean up, boom, I shut it down. So there's so many different variety of ways to service sealed transmissions. What part of town do you live in?
I live in Northeast Phoenix.
Okay.
About 32nd and Shea.
I would probably call Blackwell at 40th and Greenway. 40th and Greenway.
Okay.
And tell him Mark Salem says that he knows that he's not going to know the answer to the question, but would you call me back with an estimate to change my transmission fluid? And I'd like an out-the-door estimate. OTD, out-the-door. Okay?
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you. You're welcome. Maintenance is tough. I'll just read you. I have a sheet here in front of me my daughter provides me. Air conditioning service. No, you don't change the Freon. Alignment check. Yeah, we do that just to see if something's way out of whack, but you're not going to get the three-whiskered kid to do an alignment check because he's going to look at the arrow and the green and the red, and he's going to tell you everything that machine tells you, and us gray-haired guys know that sometimes you're a little out of the spec because the car drifts to the left on crowned roads, city streets, and we're going to take this alignment a little out of spec to make it go straight. So alignment check. Brake check, that can be done most of the time during an oil change. Brake fluid flush, 75 to 100,000 miles. Cooling system flush, 75 to 100,000 miles. Electrical check, only when you need it. Then you got an inspection for the check engine light, the ABS light, the traction control light, the airbag light, you got all that. Then you got, and labor rate is important, but here's why labor rate should not be anything on the top three of how you decide. Because if a guy is going to do a 4-hour job and he's at $100 an hour, it's easy. It's 4 hours. But there's two variables there, their hourly rate and the amount of time. So if I was a bandit and I said, I'm going to charge you $150, but I'm also going to say instead of 4 hours, it's 6 hours. All of a sudden, labor rate doesn't mean nothing. And the reverse is true. The reverse is this. I want to give you a cheap labor rate, but in reality, I'm going to take the 4 hours and make it five. So my effective labor rate is 125. I'm telling you that 25% of the shops in the Phoenix Valley area probably practice that on a regular basis by manipulating the labor rate and the amount of hours necessary to do it. Now, I must tell you, when it comes to the amount of hours, I'll give you an example. Eddie the other day did a 16-hour oil gasket underneath the timing chain of this car with variable valve timing. I mean, we're talking about electronics and sophistication. 16 hours. So I was there and I was talking to him, and the front of the motor, the front half of the motor, is just one giant grease ball. So I said to him, what'd you bid it? He said, I bid it at 17. And I said, why?
1 minute.
And he says, because I'm washing everything. When I give him back, the front of that engine will look brand new. And he says, I'm taking the timing cover off. I'm going to do the oil pump. I'm not going to charge him for that because I have to unbolt it anyway. So he says, but I'm getting an extra hour for cleanup. Now, I saw that car when it was done, and I want to tell you, he did a magnificent job. So if the customer looks at it and he says, well, that cost me $125, he took all the parts off. He probably washed 20 or more parts and all the bolts that hold all that stuff together. But the timing cover, the timing chain cover, is this massive thing that might be 2 feet wide and might be 2 feet tall. So it's a lot of work, and yes, my shop is allowed to deviate. If we're going to take the valve covers off your car and they're a ugly looking red, if you want them painted, it's going to cost you another $50. We're going to take them and wash them. We're going to put them over here. We're going to paint them and put them back on. So we'll oftentimes ask you, do you want us to kind of look, make it look a little better than it does? Yeah. Okay. That's an extra $60. So there's a lot of us that do that, but we're upfront about it. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We have 602-508-0960. Twenty-one minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday here on 960 The Patriot, we're talking about cars from 10 to noon. I'm going to just real quick talk about Blackwell Automotive. Tom and I have been friends since probably the mid-90s. We're both cut from the same cloth. Neither one of us has been described as passive, and both of us have a bark, and it's used typically in the shop arena, and we're both well skilled, but Tom's actually, with respect to manufacturing and adapting parts and fixing stuff that doesn't have a part for it, he's probably a little better than we are. Tom's really good at older cars, really, really good at older cars. So if you're in the 40th Street and Greenway area and you don't have a garage, then stop by Tom's, and that's called Blackwell Automotive, and of course his name's Tom, and like I said, he does domestic and foreign cars, but he's a really good guy. All right, let's go back to the phones, and oh, by the way, anybody else, 602-508-0960, we got three lines open, but we're going to kill Daniel, or we're going to take Daniel's line right now. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing great, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So I had a simple question about, I'm pulling a 18-foot trailer. We normally have about 1,000 to maybe 1,500 pounds, so it's not too much on it. So I'm just curious about air pressure for my truck that I'm pulling it at, because I think normal is around 32, but I would like to do more than that. I just don't know kind of where it should be.
Great question. Okay, I'm going to give you a bicycle to ride to Tucson, and the tire on the side of it says maximum inflation is 60 pounds. And I'm going to ask you to ride to Tucson with 30 pounds. Are you going to do it?
I am not.
Okay, neither am I. Now, when your car goes down the road, it likes fully inflated tires. And it gets better fuel economy, and the tires run cooler. Now, the tire has it written right on the side. That's maximum load, 3,200 pounds at 54, 58, 60 PSI. I run every car I own at maximum tire inflation. Now, that's different than the sticker on the door. So the sticker on the door may say 38, but I'm running them at 45. The tire can handle 45. I want it to run cool. Now, here's another thing. If your tire's half inflated and you kiss a curb, there's a good chance the wheel is going to pinch the rubber sidewall and cut the tire. But when I'm driving a truck and I've a car, whatever, and I've got fully inflated tires, I should bounce off that curb. When you go through a pothole with a tire that's kind of soft, you're going to cut the tire if you go through fast. But on a fully inflated tire, it's going to be a little bit of a rodeo ride, but you're not going to cut the tire. So because of better fuel economy, because it runs cooler, I say forget the stickers. Now, this goes on the trailer, too. On the trailer, it'll say on the side of the tire, maximum load, 4,000 pounds at 45 PSI. I'd run the whole shebunger at maximum inflation. Now, people are going to say, oh, you're going to wear the center out of the tire. No, you're not. I've done this too many years. No, you're not. And you're just going to be better all the way around. But the two important things, as I've already described, is that you get better fuel economy and the tire runs cooler. And I think that's what you're after.
Let me ask you one other question. I was thinking about upgrading my vehicle. We have an SUV now, and we need a truck just to use the bed as well. I've been looking at a 2011 to 14 Tundra, and I was just curious, if I'm pulling that kind of weight, will the 4.6, in your opinion, do fine, or should I do the 5.7?
You said it's only 1,500 pounds.
It's really not much weight.
Okay. I'm thinking either one of them. But here's what you do. Just get on the internet and find out trailer towing capabilities for those spread of years of cars. Now, if your truck weighs 4,000 pounds and it can handle 2,000 pounds of load, then it's going to be called a 6,000-pound gross vehicle weight. Gross vehicle weight includes the load. Sometimes they'll have a trailer towing package, and so they'll say trailer can be 1,500 pounds with the 4.7 liter. So you know you're all right. But if it says this motor has 3,000 pounds and you're only doing 15, you're home free. I want to tell you, for quality, I like Toyota and I like the Tundra. There's a lot of them on the road. And they seem to be somewhat trouble-free trucks. So if you're going to buy one, I think all I would do is just, I can virtually assure you that just about any motor you have is going to haul a 15-foot trailer. If that's really what it weighs, that's really nothing. That's nothing.
Sure.
Okay?
Now, when those say tow package, is that just because they have a hitch and a 5-pin, or would that probably indicate that they have a oil and transmission cooler?
That could very well equal some or all of those. Sometimes they add a leaf to the back of the truck. Now, hopefully you have a 7-pin Bargman, B-A-R-G-M-A-N, because that's what you should have. Now, if they have a 7-pin Bargman and you have a 5-pin flat connector, you can buy an adapter. You plug in the Bargman, and then you plug your 5-pin into the back of the Bargman. So there's an easy transition between those two. You don't have, unless, of course, somebody's messed up the wiring on the truck, and then you'll have to go through and put the taillights where they belong in the left turn and right turn. But, you know, I think you're going to find in that year spread, you're going to find it's all going to be 7-pin Bargman. So there's 6 pins around the side, and then you got the center pin. So I think
awesome.
You'll be all right.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Good enough. You bet, Daniel. Thank you. Tony, you're up next.
Hey there, Mark.
Hi.
Hey, I was going to ask you a question to try and fill in some gaps that are coming up with some of these teaser ads with a new Ford F-250 and 350 truck with the new engine that's going to be available coming up 2019 for the 2020 truck. They're talking about and, you know, giving a lot of description about the new 7.3 gas motor. And, I mean, it looks like give a lot of good description about it. I mean, it's reminiscent of the old 460, but now it's got, you know, mileage. And they're claiming it's going to you know, compete with the diesel. And, you know, if that's the case, well, you don't have to do any of the urea, you know, tank mm-hmm. or anything like that. They give the displacement, but they won't give the horsepower, foot-pounds of torque, the mileage, or anything like that. So I'm just wondering if you have any inside info or any, insight as to what, you know, is this motor going to be viable?
Well, here comes the Chevy, Ford, Dodge kind of, discussion. But if you were my brother and I loved my brother, and I do love my brothers, I would say to you this. The last few motors that Ford's come out with has been miserable failures. And their new 6.7 is kind of new, but it's showing promise. Their 7.3 gas way along, or their 7.3 diesel a long time ago in 1999 was a monster motor, and it was a great motor. But the 6-liter and the 6.4 and a whole bunch of their V8s gas, we work on those a lot. I am very happy my customers drive those Fords because I get to fix them a lot. I don't know. I jump to the 7.3. It's a big block for no question about that. I would like it to be a derivative of the, 460 motor. Maybe it has, but it's not likely because the 460 motor was still, you know, throttle body, fuel injection. This is probably port fuel, maybe sequential port fuel. But no, I'm not going to advise any of my customers, my loved ones, my neighbors to go out and buy the 7.3, a brand new gas motor in a Ford. And I would do the same on the General Motors or a Chrysler. I would do the same. I say we need a year's worth of how they're doing. That new Dodge with that EcoDiesel, that's the biggest piece of crap we've seen in a long, long time. And we've got major repairs on that at starting at 30, and the same repair goes from 30,000, and we had one the other day, it was 110. So we're talking lots of money. So it's going to take them a while to figure out what's, they already know what's wrong. The EGR is melting the intake manifold, and the EGR is hanging open. So, and people are driving them like a grandma, and they don't, you got to drive a diesel like you stole it. So, there's lots of problems, but the answer to your question is no. I wouldn't advise anybody to go with the 7.3 until we have at least a year on it. Okay? Okay?
We're at the bottom of the hour.
Oh, okay. Sorry. We'll be back in a minute. 34 minutes after 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, 602-508-0960. We've got four lines open right now, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us. And let me go to Will. Will, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Love the show. Thank you for all the advice you give us.
Thank you.
Okay. I have a 2003 Honda CR-V, 200,000 miles. Awesome car. Runs great. I keep getting this light on my dash, and it says it's the emissions, and you look in the manual, and it says it could be you don't tighten your gas cap, I guess, or something like that, three clicks or something. So how concerned do I need to be about this? I have no problems with the car whatsoever, and it's just kind of driving me crazy for like the last month.
Okay. Well, you won't pass emissions with that light or the hidden codes behind that light, that emissions light.
Okay,
here's what we do. The fuel system should, the fuel vapor system, which is the vapors on top of the gas in your tank, we suck those fumes off and we run them through the engine, okay? But we have all these little solenoids that open and close. Now, we don't want to suck the gas or the vapors off the tank when you're doing 80 miles an hour and the fuel's sloshing like crazy because we're going to get a little liquid gas, and that's not what we want. Then we have a pressure sensor in the top of the tank, and when we suck a vacuum on it, the pressure sensor says, I see you. So, yes, a gas cap is one of them. If you want to do like everybody else in the world is go get a gas cap. Now they're going to say, oh, you got to buy a Honda one, or you got to buy this, or you got to buy that. I'd get a Stant, S-T-A-N-T. They make most everybody's radiator and gas caps. So I'd get a Stant if I were you. But you can try a gas cap, but you're going to have to deal with this at least a month before you go through emissions next. Now, here's what we do. We hook up a smoke machine to your system. And the very first thing we do is follow the lines from the fuel tank forward to the engine compartment, and almost always we'll find one broken. Now you plug it back in, you run the test again, you leave the smoke on it during the lunch hour, you come back, the smoke, you know, hasn't escaped, and then you're done. I make it sound easy, but really that's an hour or an hour and a half's worth of work. Plugging in the machine and all that kind of stuff. So you can drive it the way it is. You're not going to hurt it, but you're going to have to deal with it before you go to emissions next.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much, Mark. Appreciate
You're welcome.
It.
You're welcome. You know, when it comes to labor rates, I'll share this with you. My daughter, Andy, surveys, I don't know, 15 to 25 shops in our area. And we're next to a lot of dealers. There's some chain stores. There's some independent garages. There's quick lube facilities. And we do, twice a year, we do a very in-depth, Andy does this. She calls and she says something like, "Hi, I'm Andy from ASU and I'm doing some surveys." Because if she says she's Andy from Salem Boys, they're probably not going to tell her. So anyway, we make up this story all the time and she does this. The average labor rate in my area, I think, is 132. That's all everybody put together divided by. Now, it's clear the dealers are up in the 140, 145, and even actually 175 an hour range. And most independents are going to be give or take about 125. The 105 guys I'm a little suspicious of, in case they add the hours, they add more hours, which gives them an effective rate of 125. So my average area in my area is 132. We're at 125. I'm pretty comfortable with that. I'm real comfortable with that. We don't want to be at the average. We want to be slightly below the average, but I think we're better than the average. But I can justify my labor rate. So when people say, "What's your labor rate?" and I say 125, or anybody says that, and they say, "Whoa, you're expensive." No, we're not. All the dealers over there, or these dealers from this particular organization, are all at 145 for your car. So it's a labor rate's important, but it's important to understand that the average ticket has probably an hour and a half to 2 hours worth of labor on it. The average. Certainly, we did one the other day, it was 16 hours. But the average ticket's a couple hours maybe at the most. So anyway, that's what you want. You know, I don't think you want to spend a lot of time doing labor rates and letting that decide, because there's going to be somebody out there who gives you a $90 labor rate, but it's 1 hour job, so it should be $90, but he bills you for 2 hours and you're paying $180 an hour, and then all of a sudden you're not in a comfort zone. So that's what I would do if I were you. 602-508-0960. If you have a question, I've still got another 40 minutes on the show. You can also call, email me, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. If you give me your phone number. Most of the times I don't want to type a dictionary or a long story novel, so I'll usually call you, and because I usually have lots of questions to ask you. So you say your car pulls to the right, and we have a conversation before I can kind of hone in. So it's a give and take, like the radio show. I love it that all the guys today have said, "I got a 15 Sierra with a 6.6 liter, and I've got a service engine." That's wonderful. And then he says, "I got 67,000 miles on it." That's the give and take. You give me information, I ask you for more information, you answer the questions, and it runs it through my computer in my head. And speaking of computer, my wife says that my hard drive is crashed and so is my RAM. And I'm not quite sure what that means. I've forgotten what radio station I'm at, so I'm just going to take a break now. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange over on Washington and 40th Street. If there's a Fred Flintstone of transmissions, it's Phil. I've told you before that I think on real sophisticated issues, you need to look for a gray-haired technician, somebody who's been in the business more than 3 years, somebody that's older than your underwear. So it's entirely possible that you need somebody, especially if you have an older car, but the fundamentals of how a transmission works have not changed. It's how we shift it that has changed. Phil from Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around since 1968. He's at 40th Street in Washington. He's the only shop in the Phoenix area that I can confirm is a good transmission shop. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Cameron, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I had a question for you. I drive a 2014 Scion XD.
Okay.
I leave it for work. I drive for a living. I'm putting about 30 to probably 40,000 miles on a year.
Okay.
Throughout my day, I'll be driving for about 6-7 hours a day, and I'll be making about 20 to 30 stops a day. Hop out of my car, take my pictures, and do what I got to do. I'll actually leave my car running all day.
Mm-hmm.
Is that bad to do, or should I be turning it off and starting it every time I hop out?
It's 6 to 1.5 dozen there, but let me ask you a question. How long are you letting it idle?
It'll be idling no more than 10 minutes.
Okay. Now, when you drive it, do you drive? Could you put a glass of hot chocolate between your legs and not spill it? Or you would never put a bottle or a cup of hot coffee between your legs because you know you'd spill it. How do you drive it?
I'd probably spill it.
Okay. All right. I say I'm a little uncomfortable with the 10 minutes, but I'm thinking 5, give or take a couple, is I would just leave it running. If you were my kid, I'd say just leave it running. I'm happy you're driving it like you stole it. I'm happy you're driving it kind of a little aggressively because that'll warm up the emission system and that'll keep the oil hot and all that other kind of stuff. So 10 minutes I'm a little uncomfortable with, but if it's in the 5 to 7 range, and sometimes you don't know, but, hey, you gotta go to the dance with the girl that got you there. And if you've got 30 to 40,000 and you haven't had any problems, people are going to say the battery and the starter is going to overcome the savings of just sitting there and running the gas. Your car is going to sip gas at idle, and I don't really care about the gas. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. All righty. Let's go to Don. Don, you're up next. How can I help you?
Beyond Hill.
Yes, sir?
You know that.
I know that. What?
Did you get a text from Alan yesterday?
Did I get a text from Alan?
Yes.
My son?
Your son, Alan, yes.
Yes, I did. But it wasn't about you. It wasn't. If this is Don, the tow truck driver, it wasn't about you. So if you rang his bell yesterday. No.
Well, it should have been.
Okay. Well, yesterday I was on a tractor most of the day, and I didn't have my phone. So even if he would have texted me, but to be honest with you, my wife would have used it. Okay. So anyway, we're not going to talk about a text you had my son send me because I know you, and I don't want to be fired today. So if you've got anything else on your mind, spill it now. Otherwise, I'm saying goodbye.
Oh, man. Well, I was talking about a show last week, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
And well, all right. Well, just give it to me quick, buddy.
Okay. I was looking for a fuel check. You know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't, and I need you to get off Bluetooth so we can hear you.
Oh, no, I'm on speaker.
Okay, all right. So give it to me quick. Give it to me quick.
I'll have to call you on your cell, I
okay.
guess.
All right, yeah, it's not for radio, and I appreciate you calling me, and we're going to go on to Bill. Bill, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, how's it going? I never heard that saying, you gotta dance with the girl, the guy there. That's good. I like that.
Well, I don't even know if I got it right.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, no, it's you gotta dance with the girl you took to, you gotta dance with the girl you took to the party, I think is what it means. But if sometimes I take those old things and I screw them up and my wife says, you embarrass me, and I said, I don't care.
Yeah, you know, my wife hates it when I say, good enough for the girls we go out with. To make your hair. You know?
My,
you know what? The reason I called you, man, is I got a Tundra, an 18 Tundra. I wanted to lift the rate, the front end up a couple inches. I'm wondering if I got to put A-arms on it or just those 2-inch blocks, 2.5-inch blocks.
I need
are
you
good enough or through the front end.
Okay. That's called a nose adjust, and they did it to my Dodge truck. I didn't like the droopy nose on my 1-ton Dodge, so
yeah.
they added some 2-inch spacers, and now the truck sits level. I don't know the answer to it, but I know. Have you got a pencil handy?
Yeah.
Okay, 480-598-1234. Ask for Alan, and he can answer your question while you wait. He owns a company that does that. Lifts and lowers and exhaust and winches and lighting and all that kind of crap. So he can answer your question.
Is that that Cadillac service center there on Warner Road by a car wash or something? I think I've heard of that place. Alan's repair. All right. Yeah,
it's not a Cadillac service center. Knock that. It's a nice shop. All right, let me defend myself. You can't throw that crap on the table without... We have a beautiful shop that we built in 1993. It's a beautiful shop. It's, I don't know, 12, 15,000 square feet. First of all, it has nothing to do with the price you pay because I paid it off 4 years ago. So it has not. And people come in and they go, oh, this is going to be expensive. I get that all the time, and I understand that. But, yes, that's the facility that we work at. That's the facility that my family owns. And it's 25 years old or something like that. So,
well, it looks like it was just built, man. Oh, you know,
and
those Half Moon doors, silver, are they like chrome doors when you walk in?
Yeah, those are stainless steel. Those were, back in 1993, those were $43,000 stainless steel drawers, and my architect said, you'll love them. Well, I do, because they've lasted for all these years. And they have nice glass on them, and when they broke into the shop, they broke the glass, and the glass was kind of cheap. So, yes, we do have some really nice stainless steel doors. But there's lots of women that work there, and they've kind of made it very lady-friendly. So, and here's the key. I'm going to tell you a quick story, because you're the last caller anyway. Okay. My daughter comes to me and she says, you know, we're losing about an hour and a half's worth of time every day because the guys are going next door and getting soda pops. And I said, what do you want me to do about it? She says, I want you to talk to them because we're losing an hour and a half of productivity. So I go with them over to the Quick Trip, and I understand now why they're going over there for soda pops. She's really pretty. She's really pretty. So she says, I says, you know what? This is what we're going to do. We're going to call Coca-Cola and put a 4-dispenser machine right there. And I says, and then we'll let them pick the products, and then they won't go next door. She says, okay. So she puts the machine in, and I says, where does it make the ice? And she goes, what ice? And I said, well, we need ice. So we call Coke, and they go, we don't have ice, so we have to buy this $4,000 ice maker. So we put the soda pop in that they want, and they still go over there. And now she's really mad. So then they finally stopped going over there, and she says, they stopped. And I said, okay, well, let me find out. So I go out, and I say, hey, how come you're going over to Quick Trip? Oh, no, no, no. So I go over there. The girl was transferred to 43rd and McDowell. So this whole fiasco, we have free soda pop, and here's the benefit. The FedEx guy and the UPS guy usually stop by just before lunch so they can get a soda, free soda with ice, and they can eat their lunch in their truck. There are other benefits for us giving free soda pop. It keeps the kids quiet. So anyway, that's my crazy mind working. Thank you very much, Bill. Good luck to you, buddy. All righty, we're done with that. We can't do any more calls, but I want to talk to you about Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. I admitted earlier in the show that we had a car we couldn't fix that had a noise, and we told a customer that we needed another gray-haired guy to look at it, and the closest one to their house was Larry Harker's Auto and Bob. Bob's a gray-haired guy. He's been around a long time. I've always been impressed with his tenacity and his skill level and his just ultimate knowledge about the fundamental operation of a car. So there's us guys know that what comes out of the tailpipes tells us what happened underneath the hood. And you could talk to some of these young guys about NOx and CO and HC and oxygen, and really they don't know the values that would be important. So the gray-haired guys, I'm just saying, we're skilled. And you wouldn't want somebody doing a brain operation with you that had no whiskers. So, you'd probably be happy with a bald-headed doctor that's been around the world a couple of times. So Larry Harker's is a good place. Been around for, gosh, no, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Bob and Ellen run it. Ellen runs the front office. You'll meet her when you walk in. She's a cowgirl, by the way. And then Bob runs the shop. They've been friends of mine for a very long time, and I can tell you unequivocally that Bob can fix cars. So if you got one of those cars, then, well, first, there's two kinds of cars. You got an oil change, he can take care of it. But if you've got a car that's been to 3 or 4 other shops and nobody can fix it, stop by Bob, see Bob at Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. So we talk about different things. I want to tell you that a lot of shops, including mine, cater to women. We cater to women. We have super fast high speed Wi-Fi. We have TV trays so they can put their laptop in front of them. And we let them adjust the temperature in the lobby. So they're constantly asking, are you too cold or too hot? And we'll adjust appropriately. We also cater to women. It's hard to get a woman to go into the shop and look at what we're looking at, because they always say the same thing. I don't know what I'm looking at. I know, but I want you to come in and you ask me to replace the timing cover because someone else told you you did it. I want you to walk out here with me and I want to show you what they're talking about. Now, I've got two cars in the air on either side of your car, and we're going to look at their timing covers too. You see Mrs. Jones weeping and seeping and leaking and gushing all mean different things. But a lot of times they say you've got a weep or a seep. You know, most cars over 70,000 miles have a weep or a seep in the cooling system or in the oil system or whatever. There's no reason to go in there and spend $1,000 trying to fix that. Let's wait till it becomes something that's on the floor. And we said to this older lady, do you see anything on the floor? No. Are you sure? I would know. Are you adding all that to it? No. Do you ever see any blue smoke out of the tailpipe? No. Do you ever smell burn oil? No. Okay, we put it up in the rack. It's got this wetness to it. And the wetness is not even a weep or a seep. So we look at it and we go, no, come on out here. Come on out here. Look at this. Look at this. There's lots of shops that do that. We want to put ladies in a comfort zone. So this is yours. This is this car. This is this car. As you can see. Now, if you have a bad oil leak and they're telling you you have to have it fixed, the oil leak will leak downward because of gravity, but as you're moving through the air, it'll curl down and it'll go down the underside of the car. And on a bad oil leak, you'll have spots of oil on the rear bumper and the rear window. So when you look at all of that, and on the other hand, the lady comes in and she says, they told me I needed a bunch of work and it's an oil leak. We lift it up in the air and the entire underside of the car is covered in oil from the leak all the way to the rear bumper. Bingo. We agree. So those are the kinds of things. Now, women, you should always ask to see. Now, you can't always do that, but we can FaceTime you. We can show you. We can show you a good motor mount and your bad one. We can do lots of that kind of stuff with new technology. My daughter, Andy, insists that the technician takes off an old part that is obviously bad. Now, they're going to put a new part on it, so they have a phone. They have a shop phone. We have a shop phone. And the technician has to take a picture of the two mounts side by side. Your broken one and a new one. They have to. So then Andy gets that and puts them on Instagram. And so we have good and bad parts and we have lots of pictures. So if you want to look what a motor mount looks like, go there. So nevertheless, my whole show is really self-defense for car expense. Just that simple. I'm hoping to give you self-defense for car expense because that's kind of important. In addition to that, I want you to be aware of where your owner's manual is. And when you're told that you need a cooling system flush at 70,000 miles, hand that person your owner's manual and say, would you look that up and show me where it says that?
1 minute.
Because if he's lying to you, he's going to come up with an excuse why. I don't have time. So your owner's manual is written for your car. It's a good thing to follow. If you're told to do something, hand them your owner's manual and say, where does it say that you need to flush my tailpipe? Where does it say that you need to regurgitate the air in my air conditioning unit? Those are the kind of silly stuff. Where does it say that you have to clean my throttle blades or flush my fuel injectors? Show me in my owner's manual. That's really a hard question to answer, especially if you decide to be a bandit. So mark@marksalem.com is my email address, mark@marksalem.com. I take questions, I take criticisms, but if I'm right, I'll let you know, and if I'm not, I'll apologize, and I'll apologize publicly. So again, mark@marksalem.com. Please drive safely, please wear your seatbelt, please don't drink and drive, and if somebody does something nice for you, would you roll down your window and give them a wave with your left hand? That's a good idea.